I'm Eden Brand. I completed my Master's of Public Health at Emory University, Rollins School of Public Health. I did my undergrad at the University of Michigan in psychology and gender and health, and I've worked both internationally and domestically, usually on issues regarding HIV prevention, behavioral modification, and psychosocial programming. My presentation is entitled Knowledge and Perceptions of Counselors Regarding Counselors' Referrals for Care, Treatment, and Enrollment in Research Studies. I just want to disclose that my lecture fees were paid for by the Rwanda-Zambia HIV Research Group. Just to give you some background on the population that I worked in, the research was conducted in Zambia, which is in sub-Saharan Africa. This is a region that's most heavily burdened by HIV. Many other people have presented throughout the conference that 67% of all people worldwide living with HIV are in sub-Saharan Africa, and 72% of all AIDS deaths occur in sub-Saharan Africa. Specifically in Zambia, a quarter of all adults are considered to be HIV positive. This basically commemorates a generalized epidemic where it's reached out to multiple sections of the population. And the majority of HIV infections are transmitted through heterosexual sex. To define some terms that I'm going to refer to throughout the rest of the presentation, a serodiscordant couple is a couple where one member is HIV positive and the other is HIV negative. And CVCT, or couples volunteer testing and counseling, is where both members of the couple are tested at the same time. They receive their results at the same time and hopefully receive referrals at the same time. Studies have found that this is much more effective than testing one person at a time, one member of the couple. And CVCT also has been found to reduce the risk of transmission from the negative partner to the positive from 20 to 7% yearly. Continuing on, it's also estimated that one out of five couples within the capital of Zambia, Lusaka, are serodiscordant. So one member is HIV positive and one's negative. And 55 to 93% of all HIV infections occur within discordant couples. So this is a very big population to be focusing on, transmission and reduction of transmission. Basically, to work with the serodiscordant couples is a really unique opportunity for both biobehavioral and biomedical forms of transmission, because we can work on studying how disease progression occurs in the negative part from the positive partner to the negative partner, and to research the effects of behavioral modification. Also, it's estimated that only half of discordant couples that receive referrals actually utilize them for either care and treatment or potential enrollment into a research study. Just to define what I mean when I talk about a proper referral is a referral that provides the couple with necessary information about health services and studies that they might be eligible for. And there's two main issues with providing an improper referral, one of which they may provide the couple or fail to provide the couple with information that they might need for care and treatment, and they may also promote a biased or non-representative sample within the given research study. So the research question that guided this study is, how do HIV test counselors operationalize the term proper in reference to proper referral practice for post-test counseling of discordant couples? Just to talk about the methodology for a moment, thematic analysis was used to analyze the data. This basically allowed the researchers an opportunity to look at both the themes in a contextual form and to explore both patterns of ideas that arose. The theory of diffusion of innovations, or the DOI, basically was used in a lot of other HIV/AIDS prevention sessions, and it was allowed to influence both the interview guide and allowed us to view a proper referral as an innovation that's being spread to the counselors and whether or not they were going to adopt it, and helped the researchers to decide if counselors' ability to give proper referrals. So applying the DOI to the referral practice. The DOI was used in the study to interpret a counselor's ability to give appropriate referrals, their willingness to give appropriate referrals, their perceived degree of benefit for providing appropriate referrals, the complexity of doing referral practice properly, and the compatibility of giving a proper referral with what they were currently doing. So the sample that I used was the Zambia Emory HIV Research Project, which is one of two sources of the Rwanda-Zambia HIV Research Group. The other source is in Kigali, Rwanda. ZERP, or the Zambia Emory HIV Research Project, runs couples volunteer testing and counseling at government health clinics throughout the greater Lusaka area, and they employ both full-time and part-time counselors. All of the counselors were recruited from health clinics, as well as ZERP main site, qualitative interviews were conducted with them, which lasted from 10 to 15 minutes. And these interviews really looked at the current referral practices of counselors, the knowledge that they have about ZERP, their beliefs about, and their beliefs about what a proper referral is. Field notes were taken and the data was intercoded using a research assistant to assure that themes were coded and applied consistently. The entire sample composed of 64 counselors. Research and data collection was basically stopped because saturation point was considered to be reached. 82% of all part-time counselors were reached and 63% of all full-time counselors were reached. And just to point out some other interesting things, as you can see, this is a breakdown of the data. All of the part-time counselors that were interviewed had been to Main Site. Also, the majority, or 70% of the full-time counselors, had worked at ZERP for 5 or more years. So most of the counselors that were interviewed should have a good familiarity with ZERP and their practices. Taking a little more in-depth look at results, basically no overall difference was found between full-time or part-time counselors, and there was no difference deemed between male and female counselors, which was interesting. But at that point, we considered all of the counselors to have a similar interpretation. Also, as you can see, full-time counselors are less likely than part-time counselors to provide a referral for ARVs. Also, male counselors were slightly more likely to believe that couples were fake, so they weren't testing for the desirability to know what their status was, potentially for incentive money or for other benefits that were provided while testing. Another major finding is that no referrals were given for TB screening or testing for by either part-time or full-time counselors, and that the majority of referrals were given for study enrollment, and less than 10% of referrals were given for other exams, care and treatment, or consultations. So this just gives you a breakdown of the 5 main themes that arose from the thematic analysis. I'll briefly go over each one in this slide, and then I'll break down into the next section. So communication was the most commonly arising theme with 2 main sub-themes, the message content and the presentation of the message. Decision-making and viewing decision-making as a process was the 2nd most commonly discussed theme, with the sub-themes of viewing decision-making as a process, the interaction of gender, blame, and power, sensitization, and stigma. Ethical standards was another theme mentioned that had 2 sub-themes of informed choice and confidentiality. Encouragement of referral uptake was another theme with the sub-themes of reassurance and incentives of coercion. And finally, operational factors was also an apparent theme that arose from the interviews with the sub-themes of time and tangible resources. So to look a little more in depth at communication, communication is very interesting because it was talked about in almost every single interview session. Counselors really thought that the communication between both the couple and the counselor needed to be accurate, knowledgeable, and complete. They wanted it to be provided in a dialoguing session. They wanted the counselor to talk about the individual couple's risks and benefits of either utilizing or not utilizing referrals for care and treatment or research study. As one counselor said, it's really important to personalize the information, both internally, the counselor, and to the couple. So they said, now we can tell them how it works because I've and what I know because I've seen it. So this was referring to being able to travel to the Main Site and to get training to properly give referrals. Just speaking a moment about decision making, it was something stressed by counselors that the couples go through a decision. Sometimes they will say that they're coming. Sometimes that decision will change and it's a process that they work their way through and that they should be aware of it. So one counselor said, in our presence, they say they're coming, but then they discuss it among themselves and decide not to come. Also discussing the role of gender, potentially which member of the partner is positive and which is negative and how that might affect their decision, and the impact of stigma and sensitization from both the community, family, and friends, and how this affects their ability to decide if they're going to come for further treatment or for any other testing or enrollment into a study. So one counselor said, it's very difficult if the man is negative and the woman is positive. Speaking about ethical standards and encouragement, these were 2 themes that kind of interacted together. Counselors kind of decided that ethics were important, but they did vary on how they defined it. Overall, they all agreed that it's important to both provide confidential status and testing and to ensure that couples get enough information to make an informed choice. But some argued that over-encouragement or over-reassurance was a form of coercion, and using incentives was also a form of coercion. So one counselor said, I encourage them to go and do the test there and get the services that they offer. This is also countered by other counselors who said, you can't force people, it's supposed to be voluntary. And if they think they get food and transport, some will go due to poverty. And this is referring to the fact that couples that actually enroll in the research study that the study focused on would receive transport to and from the site and also a meal when they went to their study visits. The last theme that arose was really kind of interesting because it wasn't something that we'd anticipated, just the impact of operational resources, so time. Counselors don't have enough time to give a proper referral. They don't have enough time to establish rapport with the couple. They're overwhelmed. More counselors are needed. It's too involving. We need more time with the couples, as one counselor said. And this is really similar to findings in literature, but was interesting because it was often offered as the most impactive way for a counselor to not be able to do a proper referral. They also listed the need for more tangible resources, so pamphlets or take-home information to give the couple so that they could go home and have something to readdress what had been talked about, and more rooms or private settings to give the sessions in. Other findings relating both back to the DOI is that low referral rates might relate to the fact that a counselor doesn't think the couple needs the information. They don't think they need this information about care and services, or they don't think that they're going to use them, so maybe that's why they're not providing the referrals. And also that they refer more to the study because they think that it will benefit the couple. So they'll get food, they'll get transport, they'll get free health care, et cetera. Some other unexpected findings. We didn't anticipate that male counselors would be more likely to stress the importance of reassurance and encouragement. That's kind of counterintuitive based on typical gender roles. And also that transport might be the most feasible reason that couples don't use these referrals. They cannot get to the services, they can't utilize other clinics' access because they just aren't located nearby. So to conclude, I've talked a lot about what a component of a proper referral is in definition of the counselors. And to sum it up, basically they define a proper referral as one that's accurate, knowledgeable, and complete, provided in a dialoguing session specifically addressing risk and benefits to the individual couple. A referral should be a decision process that the couple goes through, and the counselor should touch upon that. They should address both the positive and negative partner's genders and how that might interact in their decision, the impact of stigma on the couple's decision, as well as sensitization and potential mechanisms that the couple could use. And they should ensure the couple's confidentiality and provide them with enough information to make an informed choice. Also, they should reassure and encourage the couple, but not use incentives or excessive encouragement as a form of coercion. And the referral should not be rushed. It should be provided in a private setting and potentially provide the couple with take-home information in the form of a pamphlet or something else. So some recommendations for improving the referral process. This was really something that was stressed upon with the research organization in which this was done. So counselors want more organizational support. They want trainings, they want management on site. They want fewer clients or more counselors available to deal with the increasing demand and the stress of the environment. So this is a very stressful environment. The majority of the people that they're testing have just been identified to be either HIV positive or the partner of an HIV positive individual. And this is both stressful for the couple as well as the counselor that's trying to provide them with more information. Also, potentially increasing trainings and referrals and connections between the training organization and the individual counselor. Some limitations of the study. I do not speak Nyanja or Bemba, which are the two most commonly spoken languages in Zambia. So all of the interviews were conducted in English, which is often the counselor's second, third, fourth, fifth language. They might not be familiar speaking that. The interview guide was short. At times it didn't fully differentiate between interview or referrals for care and treatment and referrals for the research study. Because of cultural divide and the common use of electricity or the loss of electricity, I was unable to tape record the interviews, and so field notes were taken. And it was impossible to define what a successful counselor is. So how many counselors are actually getting their couples to come for referrals? Some directions for future research, conducting them in local languages, maybe using native Zambians, or at least having more time to develop a rapport with the counselors, diversifying the sample or using organizations outside of the one that I worked with, or governments and their counselors, using an interview guide that differentiated between the type of referral, and collecting data to identify a successful counselor. So the total number of successful couples that come in for a referral over the total number of referrals that that counselor gives. And looking at the clients, I think that it would really be a successful way to get a better idea of what's going on in the referral process is talking to individuals. Why are you not coming? What referrals were you given? Why do you think that you would utilize this or otherwise? And I just want to thank all my funders, specifically the Emory Rollins School of Public Health and the Rwanda Zambia HIV Research Group, my wonderful committee, and all of the in-country support staff. Thanks. So I don't know if anyone has any questions.
Thank you.
If not, I apologize. I have to catch a flight, so I am going to duck out.
And do you get to go there?
Yes, I collected, all of the research was conducted in Lusaka, Zambia, so I spent last summer there for 4.5 months and met some really awesome people that were great about helping both conduct research and getting around the country, speaking languages that you don't know. But yeah. All right, thank you.